Hi, everybody. Welcome to another interview here. We have Six by Six, who are happy to welcome back to talk about their sophomore album, which comes out on April 26th, called Beyond Shadowland. We have Robert Barry, Ian Crichton, and Nigel Glockler. Hey, guys. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, Roy.
And yeah, we're going to try and make this work. We have a little bit of a fun kind of thing we're going to try and do with this as well, but talk about the new album, talk about what you guys have been up to, and see what's going on. So I guess, you know, the debut album did really, really well. I think it was really well received. A lot of great singles. You guys had real videos. The whole thing came out really nice. But that was sort of still living in COVID land, right? So now we're out of that. You got this new album, Beyond Shadowland. Rob, I want to start with you. Just talk about when you guys decided to, okay, we're going to do a second album. How do you get things rolling in the beginning?
Well, like you said, the first one did really well. We were all kind of, wow. I mean, we really liked it. We felt good about it. We felt we came together musically and artistically in every way, but we didn't know how it would be received. And it was received so well that the pressure when we decided, when the record company says we got to have a second one, was immense. Because how do you follow up something that's so well without a little bit of, oh man, how can we meet that? I'll just be honest. I mean, Ian sent me a few things. I sent him a few things back. And he said to me, he goes, it's not as good as the first album. I go, shit. Right? And I said, well, yeah, of course it's not. I have to work on it more. So I sent it back to him for him to work on it, you know. Then Nigel sent an idea for the song called Titan, and it was cool. But again, you know, boy, making that first step. And Nigel, for the first time, the first album, he wasn't a writer. Now he's written two songs co-written on this one. So it just kind of came together slowly, and all of a sudden, it seemed to click. We worked through that, I don't know, is it writer's block, Ian, when the pressure we felt from the first album was sort of a writer's block almost, right? How are we going to meet that standard? And then that's what clicked.
Really busy, too. touring, trying to get this all done.
Ian, when you were sitting there coming up with new ideas, was it similar to the first album? Is it coming up with riffs and then sending them to Robert and going back? I mean, what was the process this time around?
Pretty much the same. I come up with a bunch of parts, some riffs, but a lot of sections and two sections. Robert's got really great arranging chops, so I sent them down to him to arrange them, and we just kept at it. I was really happy with it. I had a lot of stuff on the back burner too that wasn't used, and I brought that out, and it's worked out really well. Yeah, so keeping the same tone as the first record. I think this is a little better, actually, as it's turned out. But quite happy with it at any rate. You know.
Well, I've had a chance to hear the record, and it is fantastic. But it also, it goes in a few different directions than I think the first one went. You guys didn't make a copy of the first record by any means. There's a lot of really cool acoustic stuff this time around, which I think is great, and a lot more proggy moments. You know, when you were putting this stuff together, were there moments where you said, like, no, this is too much like the last record, we need to try something else, we need to push it in another way? You know, how did you analyze music as it was coming?
It didn't really land that way. I guess we were maybe a little concerned about that at first, but once we started going, that was just off the wayside. It was onto the new stuff, and it all worked out really well. You know, just stayed with it, worked on it. This thing where it's heavy electrics mixed with nylon acoustic, you know.
Yeah.
So I'll definitely have a floating acoustic on stage, you know, with an embrace on a mic stand. So I can just walk over and click a button and play those parts, click it off back to the electric, you know.
We wanted to go heavier too, right? We really wanted this to be a heavier album.
Heavier.
We didn't want to make the same album, which would have been the safe way to go because people liked it. But because the three of us we worked so well together, we kind of said, hey, let's make this heavier, drums more pounding, you bastard. Not really. I mean, there's lots of more complicated, I think, drum parts on this, although there's still the heavy, you know, straightforward driving thing. But we went for a heavier deal, and it was just sort of natural, really.
So, Nigel, you ended up writing a few songs on this album, as Robert said earlier. How did that come about, and what prompted you to try and write this time around for this record?
I mean, the first time around, the stuff was already written anyway, right. You know. And so for me, for the last album, it was basically powering through, trying things out. For this album, though, I had some ideas that I'm always writing anyway, just popping things down because I like playing keyboards and stuff. So, you know, played a couple of things to the guys, and Robert mucked about with them, and there you go, you know.
Yeah.
That was it. I mean, I like posing, you know.
Well, cool. That may be another added element to the record that is something that's standing out, you know, which is pretty cool.
One of them's a big test because one of our favorites, the three of us, one of our favorites on the album is one that started with Nigel, and the record company, the manager, nobody's mentioned it. So we think it's really good. We think that people are going to really like it. So we're sort of waiting to see when it's out what they think. It's just fun.
Are you going to tell us which one it is, or it's a secret?
No, it's Titans. I mean, you know.
Okay. Is that the one with the chanting?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's really different. Different for
us. Yeah, for sure. No, that's cool. Yeah. Definitely noticeable for sure.
Yeah, a bit of that sort of Eastern influence.
Yeah. No, it's cool stuff, man. The album title, Beyond Shadowland, where did that come from, and what's the story behind that, Robert?
You know, interesting enough, we have this guy, Rob Fowler, who does all the print stuff for us, that did the last album cover, even starts the bios. He does everything. That's not his main job, but he's just really good at it. And he felt the same pressure because people really liked the first album cover. What was that?
I don't know.
Okay. People really liked the first album cover that management did, the band did. So Rob had to come up with something basically that sort of had the theme, you know, it was the three guys and the sidecar for the first one. And he came up with this airplane, and we sort of came out of the shadows out of nowhere with the first album because we didn't talk to anybody about it. We wanted to keep it a secret till it was launched. We did that. It did really well. And this one is Beyond the Shadows. Honestly, Rob came up with that name for that reason. And then the cover, we just loved it.
Yeah. No, yeah, pretty cool. Right. So the first one was a car. This one's a plane. Is the next one going to be a train?
You know, a flying car. Flying car is the big thing of the day. So we'll see. That's right. And it might be us in the flying car. Yeah.
Did you guys approach this any differently lyrically? Because there's times where I'm listening to it and it feels like there's a bit more personal type lyrics on it. But is that correct to assume that, or was it something else that influenced a lot of the lyrics? And who wrote? Did you write most of the lyrics, Robert, or was it?
I write the lyrics, but Ian really messed me up on the first one. He goes, you know, I like it when you're a little more psychedelic. I really, because I'd write some and they're not complete, but what do you think of the way it's going? And he'd say, oh, I really like that lyric, which meant sort of nothing. It applied, but I thought, oh, well, my whole thing is it's easier to fix an idea than to get one, right? So I put it down, then I fix it. He didn't want me to fix a couple of them. After I thought about it, I thought, wow, this works, you know, and it lets people put themselves into it. The new one, I'm a kind of a positive thinking kind of guy, and there's a lot of negativity going on. So there's, from a personal viewpoint of, you know, don't get controlled by all this stupid media stuff and everything, you know, be your own person, you know, look for the good in the world. But then again, Obliex, you know. It's like it can mean a whole lot of different things. It's tough now that Ian gave me the license to not have to pin it down exactly. I really enjoy that. And I don't like to analyze it too much, because then all of a sudden I go, oh, I should have fixed that. Oh, I could have made that mean something. But when it passes Nigel and Ian's inspection, basically, by the time I get words to do work vocal, I know that it, well, Ian's even said, like Titans, he goes, that means something different to me than it does to you, which is really cool.
Right. Yeah. Ian, what about the recording this time around? You know, where does the song start in terms of sending the files back and forth? And then how much of that, how long did it take to get all that ironed out?
It took most of the year. You know, I sketch things down when I write. I don't pay too much attention to having, you know, great guitar sounding that when I'm coming up with ideas and parts and songs. I like to get them down out of my head quickly. And that's what I give Robert. When we decide, you know, this is going to work, I'll re-record them. Sure, 57, 412 Marshall, diesel amp. I have a Soldano, the amp one here, different choices. And get a much better sound, concentrate on the parts, because I have clean parts and heavy parts too. That is done once we decide we like this song. You know, this is going to make it. So then I get down to recording it properly. Yeah.
When you're doing solos, do you do a lot of takes, or is it kind of like the first one and that feels right?
I like to sit down and just go for it. And I'll do it three or four or five of them, and I'll put points in that I went, okay, you know, this is really good. Because I like them to build, especially when it's on a record. Yeah, I don't want to be on a jam. You know, if I'm on stage jamming, fine, great. You can come up with some, you know, cool stuff. But on a record, yeah, I like it to make, you know, good sense for, you know, if you're going to play it over and over again. So I'll blow up, you know, a bunch of solos, record them, and pick out the map of where I want this to go, and then I'll play it.
Yeah. No, the guitar playing is phenomenal.
When I put them into the mix, a lot of times, yeah, I mean, the genius is in this guitar stuff, so incredible. But he knows every single note he plays, because sometimes, you know, all the vocals coming out, just fade out that last note. They go, you know, that last note's missing on that thing. Or the note in the middle there, you know, that's, you know, maybe I dipped it down because of the drum roll. You know, there's a note that he knows everything, and you listen to it. The only guy I've ever known that gets away with it, that usually a verse, you know, you got verse one, verse two, the guitar is the same between the two verses. He never plays them the same, or the chorus, you know, never plays the same, and every piece works. And then he remembers all that. I don't know how he does it.
Yeah. No, it's that's amazing. Yeah. Nigel, with the drumming and this time around being involved in the writing, did that change how you approached what you wanted to play?
No, not really. I just, again, I sort of had a bit more time with, you know, listening to the stuff that we had. And I mean, you know, Robert can play drums great. So it gives me a kind of, like a sort of template, but I don't, you know, I sort of get in there but they always say, do your own thing. And I think this time it was that we just had more time.
Yeah.
It was a lot more experimentation.
One of the good things about Nigel, and this went way back to GTR, 1986, we played together. I didn't care for the guy that they had. He just played great, but didn't have a thing. And a drummer's got a thing. They can play almost nothing, and it's still like Michael Jackson's Beat It, right? Or Billie Jean. It comes on, right. And you go, and the guy's doing nothing, but it just feels good. And that's what Nigel's got. When besides using all the licks he doesn't get to use in Saxon, because that's more straightforward rock, hard rock, heavy rock. He's doing all this fancy stuff too, but it's got that thing, which is hard to exactly put your finger on, but it just makes it really feel good. So
yeah. I wanted to ask you guys about a few of the tracks, the singles and that kind of stuff, and just see what those are about and how they came about. Let's start with The Arms of a Word. Robert, how does that song come about, and what is the story with that one?
Mostly, I mean, almost everything starts with Ian. Two of them started with Nigel this time, but Ian has these guitar parts that just speak to me. He'll send something. It's a rhythm. It's a whatever it is, you know, it just speaks to me. And for some reason, he sends me, I don't have the original title for that one. He sends me these wacky titles based on James Bond movie or like Wren, like a bird. And even that, you know, it fits for some reason.
I go out with my coffee and smoking it, and he's singing to me this Wren bird. It didn't quite sound like a song. It wasn't a heavy, you know, had a kind of a tweet to it. But, you know, I was thinking about it when I wrote that.
Oh, cool. Hey, whatever works. Inspiration is everywhere.
Yeah, it's the stuff speaks to me in some way that it's sort of magic that I can't explain, because from what he sends, what Nigel sent, to get, I'm the song guy. I'm the one to put, you know, the melody and the lyric, whatever. And so I sort of glue that together and then send it back. And Ian will say, you know, we should get rid of those two measures there. Let's put something else. I'm going to send you something else back, you know, and he'll develop some more parts. And it's hard for me to explain. It shouldn't work.
What's that?
Ah, there you go.
Is that you playing Wren?
Arms.
Oh, Arms. Okay.
Yeah,
couldn't make it out.
Solo, word.
That's cool.
Is that a Wren guitar?
Check it out. Bought myself a selfie studio. I've never been like this guy on the internet. I've been asked to be more, you know, savvy on the internet. I guess I'm getting there a little bit, you know, but
right.
contact a little bit.
The song that I've been hooked on is Obliex, which I think is just brilliant and a really wonderful acoustic song. And Robert, your singing on it is fantastic.
Yeah.
But I guess, Ian, I want to ask you about that, starting that song off. You know, how does that one come about? And the title, where does that come from?
Well, the title, you know, that was just really a working title. Before any music goes down on my template in the studio, you have to call it something so you can save it. So it has to be called something. And I just came up with that. I was really thinking about my dog, Minnie, of 15 years that just passed away. So, you know, she was the inspiration for that song, really.
That's a wonderful reason to write a song. Yeah, for sure. And the last one.
Robert's chorus actually works for that idea.
And, yeah. You know, yeah, that's a brilliant track. The Mission, which is like a really, really cool proggy song. You know, Nigel, talk about that one a little bit. What you remember from playing on that one?
Oh, it's just, I mean, a lot of this stuff is, you know, because I'm really used to sort of playing straightforward stuff, and I suddenly find Robert's put in like a bar of three or something. It's like, oh, God. You know,
so. Well, you were down in San Jose recording with us.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, it's interesting to, you know, to sort of run through the stuff, and then I'll be sort of playing something, and as I say, this like odd bar or creep in, like, what the hell's going on here? You know, but it's, you know, I find it very, it's good for the brain to sort of engage with this kind of stuff rather than just straightforward rock, you know?
Yeah. You sort of study it when you're playing. You're studying it when you're playing and you're adjusting. Nigel has to anchor it. So it goes nowhere if he doesn't anchor the parts and make them happen. It just, the groove is just not there. It's just whatever, you know? So he really has to get, I find him really focused, still never doing anything that doesn't come natural to him. He just has this palette. He likes all kinds of music, right, Nige? I mean, you like everything.
Yeah, but- I mean, people keep saying to me, okay, so who's your favorite drummers and stuff? And I was sort of, you know, they were expecting me to say people like Cozy Powell and stuff. And I was listening to stuff like Billy Cobham. That's where I was, you know, and Lenny White. I was listening to all that fusion stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and so, we're gonna get into your favorite drummers. That leads us into our game that we're gonna play. I think it's a good little segue here. So we have our wheel of 6x6.
There it is.
And so what we're gonna do here is have a little fun with you guys. We're going to spin the wheel, and these are sort of random topics where if it lands on it, we're going to ask one of you to name six of whatever that topic is. So
six.
Right. Or maybe if you'd rather, you could between the three of you come up with the six, if that makes it easier.
Yeah, okay. I think that would be cool.
So we'll do that. We'll do combined lists. We'll do this maybe three or four times. We'll see how this goes and how much of a train wreck it becomes, but it'll be fun.
segment.
Okay. And whoever wins, whoever does the best at the end gets 5,000 points.
There you go.
So, all right. So we'll spin it. We'll spin the wheel.
Uh-oh.
And... well, how obvious is this? All right, prog albums.
Oh, geez.
Okay. So, let's see. Let's come up with six favorite prog albums. Rob, why don't you, you want to offer maybe two?
But Close to the Edge, yes. You know, Nigel, what is the Genesis album that has Watchers of the Sky? What's it called? Do you remember?
That's Foxtrot.
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 Yeah, Genesis, Foxtrot. Definitely. Those would be two
on the top of most people's lists. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All-time classics. Nigel, you got a couple?
Oh, God. There's only
a few thousand to choose from. It's no big deal.
Yeah, exactly. Only a few thousand. I mean, quite frankly, I love Drum by Yes, actually.
Okay.
Gentle Giant. Yeah.
Drama. Yes.
In a Glass House.
In a Glass, yeah. That's a great album. Great album.
Octopus.
And Motorhead.
Three friends. Motorhead. What about moving ways? Focus.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Prog for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good. That's a good collection of albums there, I think. PFM. Which one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
PFM.
All right.
Yeah. We're in
PFM. Yeah. PFM. Definitely.
That's nine.
Yeah, we covered it. See, easy. All right, should we spin again? See what else we got?
Yeah.
You guys hear the little sound?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that sound.
Movies.
Movies. Who's the main movie guy between you guys?
Oh God, I don't know.
You're not a big movie guy. But I have a favorite movie. It's Waking Ned Divine. It's
I don't know that one.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. No.
Yeah. But an old Irish town, and the guy wins the lottery, but passes away, and they get the tickets.
Oh, I have heard of that. No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. I do know that.
Well, I'll put my two. Shawshank Redemption is one of my all-time favorites, but there's a fairly newer one called Why Him. Have you ever seen Why Him?
No.
It's the guy from Breaking Bad as the dad. It's
I saw the poster. Yeah.
It's really good, but it's raunchy. It's kind of funny.
That's a comedy, right?
Yeah.
I think I do remember that.
Yeah, it's
worth Nigel, what movies you got? Any favorites?
Yeah, I mean, a recent one I saw, which I thought was staggering, was The Covenant. Which was, what's his name, Jake Gyllenhaal or something. I think he's serving in, where is he? Afghanistan, I think, or something. And when everyone, he goes back to gets his interpreter.
Yeah,
that was recent.
That's a great film.
Yeah.
Alien? Alien, yeah.
I thought you were going to say the Barbie movie. Oh, my God.
I haven't seen Barbie yet.
Yeah. And then I like all the old sort of 60s, 70s epics, you know, like Battle of Britain, Sink the Bismarck, all that stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you know, when you guys get on the tour bus, you can watch Barbie after a show.
Oh, God.
No.
Followed by the Three Stooges. I like that movie. That was really
good. Yeah, there you go.
Three Stooges are great.
Talking of Barbie, did you see that massive, where was it? I think it was in Dubai or something. Did you see that massive robotic Barbie?
No.
I mean, this thing was about 60 feet high and it moved. She stepped out of the box. I think it's on YouTube. You'll see. I mean, there's a guy going by and scared the crap out of him.
That's great. All right, we'll have to watch that. That's funny. All right, let's do a couple more.
Okay.
It's actually fun. Oh, well, here you go. Drummers.
Oh, God.
All right, so some of your favorite drummers, and you guys don't have to say Nigel, or you can.
Yeah,
not the one.
Billy Cobham for me.
Yeah.
Terry Bozzio.
Yeah.
Steve Gadd.
Vinnie Colaiuta.
Mm. Bill Bruford.
And not forgetting the Groove Master, Phil Rudd.
Mm. Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you said Bill Bruford, of course. Absolutely. Any others that influenced you guys?
Actually, and Franz DiCoccio from PFM. He was a big influence on me, actually.
Yeah, awesome. No, what about like John Bonham and some of those guys?
He's one of my favorites, but I'd have to say that I consider Nigel a little bit like Alan White was. And yes, you know, Alan White can play anything, and he still can do all that Yes stuff really great, but he can lay it down with John Lennon. That's like Nigel does, you know. So,
yep.
Put those two guys on my list.
I'll tell you, and another heavy rock, Bill Ward.
Yeah, well, he's the master for sure.
I always preferred Bill Ward to him, actually.
Good list of guys, and of course yourself in there as well. All right, let's do one more.
Oh,
bassist.
Oh no, only worried with a drum shop.
Chris Squire.
Yeah, Squire.
Chris Squire, the best.
McCartney, of course, you know, note choice is incredible. And you got to give Geddy Lee credit for what he did and who he is. I mean, guy's amazing, you know.
Yeah,
for sure.
I hear he's kind of all. A funny story that Geddy Lee's doing a book tour now. And when Rush played in San Francisco, when I was in college, my band was called Hush. And Bill Graham put us on the bill with Rush. And in his book, he says, Bill Graham is such a jerk. He put this band called Hush just to piss us off. And that wasn't the reason he did it at all. But anyway, that's my Geddy Lee story.
any favorite bassist for you, Ian?
Billy Sheen is having
The girl that plays with Jeff Beck. What's her name? She was.
Oh yeah, Till.
Ty.
Tall.
Is it the first one? Tall? The first one was Taj Wilkenfeld or something like that. But he's got. But he had another. He had another girl after that, who was even better.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
All right, you guys got time for one more? You gotta do one more?
Sure. Yeah.
We sort of broke the six rule, I think. But
I think yeah. so too, but it's all good.
Now I got to go to Feed My Snake.
Yeah.
All right. Live albums. That's a good one.
First Grand Funk, mate. First Grand Funk live album.
Okay. Yep. Classic.
I got nothing because I don't really listen to albums.
Humble Pie live at the Fillmore.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. And funnily enough, I said Grand Funk and Ian said Humble Pie. That was the first gig right. I ever went to, which was Hendrix a free gig in Hyde Park.
Yeah.
It was a free gig in Hyde Park when Grand Funk were the original three-piece and Humble Pie were supporting them with Peter Frampton.
Oh, yeah.
And they bought out Rockin' the Fillmore shortly after that gig.
Nigel is good with coming up things for this list. You were right, Robert. He's got him,
yeah.
got him right off the top.
He's a lot deeper.
The first Kiss album.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the first Kiss live album. And I mean, and you can't take away from it Deep Purple Made in Japan.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Right on. Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff.
General Giant did a good live record,
yeah. Great. Well, this was fun. Yeah. Get to know.
Want
to
do any more?
Yeah, if you guys want. Nigel's enjoying it.
Come on, Roy.
Spin the wheel.
We got fake audience applause and everything. I should have used some of that.
Keyboardist. Tony Banks.
What happened to the snap category? Forget these music.
we'll just keep going until we get to it.
Yeah.
Of course, Rick Wakeman, you know. I mean, although Tony Banks is really my favorite.
Tony Banks.
That guy is amazing. Yeah. Oh, God. Just.
You work with
I think there's one guy you got to mention.
I was going to let you guys do that. I was going to stay away from that one. Right. Like nepotism kind of thing if I mention his name.
That's right.
No, there's nobody. There'll never be another Keith Emerson in this world. My reason for looking for a guitar player that was like Keith Emerson is how Ian and I got together. I said, unique, one of a kind, you know, doesn't play power chords all the time, you know. And there was one guy in the world that could fit that besides maybe Jeff Beck, right?
Do you have a favorite ELP song, Rob?
I mean, Carnival Nine is something I reworked for the record company with Jordan Rudess. And I forget who the drummer is now. I should remember. but it really sort of got cemented into my being. So I do like that. You know, I didn't really get to play a lot of ELP stuff with Keith and Carl. We played Nice music. And I did get earned a lot of respect for the Nice, who was actually the band that brought classical music to rock and roll. It wasn't ELP at all. They'd already done it.
Yeah.
No. So.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get snacks here for Robert. I can't. Believe it or not, I can't rig this thing. So it just lands on whatever it wants to.
Is there a women in an alcohol category?
Is it? Yeah.
So how about this one? What are some of the best concerts you guys personally have been to that you remember?
I had some weird ones. I saw the Cars and Yes together. It's kind of weird, you know.
That is weird.
And the Cars just stood there doing good, but they just stood there. And Yes, of course, was amazing.
I saw when I was very young, and had no money in Toronto. I used to go downtown and hang around the venues and wait for the crew to show up. Go, excuse me, sir, you guys need help? And I know them men. I helped Jeff Beck in with 1972 with his Rough and Ready band at Cozy Powell and all those guys. And two vans showed up and they said, sure, kid. So I grabbed all the monitors and I brought the monitors on stage for Jeff, faced them all towards the audience because I didn't know what a monitor was. It was a speaker cabinet. You know? They all laughed at me. They all laughed. Oh, that's all right, kid. They give me front row seats and that show was fantastic. Wow. And I see that a lot. I did that for Mahavishnu Orchestra the first time they came to Toronto. Saw Led Zeppelin in a 300-seater on their first record.
Wow. In Toronto. How cool.
Iron Butterfly.
I like that. Rush on the Clockwork Angels tour. Saw that. I never had the chance to see Genesis live with Peter Gabriel.
In 1973 or 74 on Selling England by the Pound. It's fantastic venue. It's like a 2,700 seater theater, you know?
So cool. Yeah.
Yeah, that was awesome. No,
there's a Canadian tribute band called The Music Box. And I saw them. I saw them in England, and they were stunning. They did the whole of The Land Lies Down on Broadway. And it was stunning. Yeah,
Peter went to see them himself, Gabriel.
When I was very young, my dad had the Vox guitar and amp store, which is the English stuff, the Beatles and all the English groups use. And he'd set me down with the stage manager at the Civic Auditorium to guard I was 9 years old, whatever, you know, guard the Vox AC-30. And I got to see The Who with 150 people in the audience. And a guy brought his guitar because he knew that Townsend broke guitars. And he brought, I think Townsend was playing a Rickenbacker then. And the guy brought a Telecaster or something up and handed it to him. And Townsend grabbed it. He goes, I have a better guitar than this to break. Here, take it back. I was like, wow. And then, of course, he broke his guitar up in a bunch of pieces. And I'm like, whoa, this is the way to go, man. This is really good. That's one of my favorite all-time
guitars. Give Townsend a guitar or just break it.
Yeah.
Hey, so if you want, it's already on snacks right there, Robert. If you want to,
we could tackle
the snacks category.
Man, Ruffles, potato chips, M&M peanuts. I did two. Go, Nige.
Dunkin'
Donuts.
Donuts. Can't go wrong with a donut.
I'm in the land of donuts. Yeah. Blueberry pie. Blueberry pie wipes everything out. And vanilla ice cream.
I've got some pumpkin spice ice cream.
That's great. I like that.
Yeah.
That's good stuff.
Well, you guys don't like blueberry pie?
I don't think I've had blueberry pie. I like blueberries.
Yeah.
But that's something I never thought I'd talk about on an interview, but you know, there you go.
Antioxidants. Blueberries.
Well, this was fun, guys. This was a very cool, and I, you know, got to really talk about some cool stuff there, which was interesting. Just to recap, there is a new album, Beyond Shadowland by 6x6, comes out April 26th, and I'm not sure when this is going to air. Maybe there's a single out by now or not. But it's a fantastic record. Really excited. Hopefully there's some tour dates that you guys can end up finally doing now with two records behind you, which would be really cool.
That's the plan.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. That is the plan. The vinyl's a double vinyl. So it's kind of a nice big album. Plenty of art in it too, which is nice.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, congrats, guys. Very happy for you. And excited for it. Good luck.
We appreciate your time.
Thanks, Roy.
Yeah, this was fun. Always fun to talk to you guys. We'll do it again soon.
Very good.
All right. Hey, thanks for checking out the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on all our socials and progreport.com. And we'll see you all again real soon. Thanks.